content warning. On this podcast, we discuss sensitive issues, including, but not limited to, swearing, tasteless jokes, situations of a sexual nature, and drug use. This podcast is not intended for children. Welcome to Bibliorex, where we read the world's worst books. I'm Bam Bam.
And I'm Bugs.
What are we reading this week, Bugs?
You found this for me at the bookstore.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's called EOS, EOS, by Jen Guberman. I don't want to be mean because I don't really feel like this author deserves it, but I can't help myself.
We're writing a fine line between critique and bullying today.
Because it's like, when it's Orson Scott Card, I'm punching up. Yeah. No one knows who I am. Everyone knows who he is. And he has, you know, wealth and money and fame and all that good stuff. And this lady is just a small-time indie author.
So. Yeah, I looked into her a little bit when we first started looking into this book. And she just seems like a perfectly nice lady. She's got a Facebook and TikTok presence, and she just likes selling her books.
Yeah. So I feel bad. But because I'm me and I have a lot of judgment, I read this book and I have so much wrong with it. There's so much wrong with it. I don't think that there's any particularly...
Nothing problematic.
Nothing really problematic. I don't need to do any over and above like content warnings or anything. So we'll just get into it. Eos is the main character from her perspective. The problem is... The book just launches you into story with no preamble. So I wrote my notes like that. And later on, I will give you what's happening.
That's fine.
So I'm just going to tell you how the book does it.
Okay.
Eos has been staking out a bar because she wants to steal a couple bottles of rum. This rum is from before the war, like super valuable. And she's underage because she's 20. So she has only had a couple of drinks and she really liked it. And she heard people talking about how valuable this rum is. So in her mind, she's gonna steal these two bottles, drink one of them at some point, and save the other and sell it to have extra cash.
Yeah, kind of weird premise right away.
Yeah.
That it's a post-apocalypse where we're still keeping up with the legality of ages kind of thing.
Yeah, I found that really weird. But the author wanted her to be so close to 21, like months away from 21, such that it doesn't actually matter. Like on a moral, if you decide that 21 is the moral age to have liquor, she's so close that part is pointless. And if she literally waited a few months, she could just go into a bar and drink as much as she wanted. She has been staking out this bar. She knows when the bartender leaves for the evening, spends time with his family, comes back in, cleans up the bar, drinks some booze himself, and then he'll head home. She's taking that time in between him heading home to have dinner with his family and then coming back to the bar to steal the rum.
That's such a weird amount of effort just to get booze.
This booze is the best, sweetest rum from before the war. What war? I don't know. When? I don't know.
Does it ever tell you what war?
No.
Okay. I didn't figure it out.
So she has her hand in the cabinet on the rum, and cops and the bartender burst in. I knew someone was watching my bar. I know someone was staking us out. Ha-ha, we caught you, red-handed thief. And they stab her with a syringe and she blacks out. That is the beginning of the book. I feel like this author read the adage, start out every story with your character wanting something, even if it's a glass of water, because then the reader will be carried with the character in that desire and it will give you a push.
Gives the character a motivation.
Yes. But this was so random. And she's not an alcoholic and doesn't pursue alcohol in any other part of the story.
Yeah, so the motivation is just a kid wants some booze.
Yeah.
And that's...
the most ridiculous way to go about it.
Yeah.
She wakes up in a courthouse in front of the judge. Because she's an adult, her parents' pleadings fall on deaf ears, and she is sentenced to exile.
Yeah, that's kind of silly. Considering an adult, but still not allowed to drink. Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of silly.
So her parents are heartbroken that she did this awful, horrible thing. Her mother refuses to look at her and says, "No, let me keep my memory of my sweet, innocent girl," and walks away and never speaks to her again.
Dramatic.
Very dramatic. Over trying to steal a bottle of rum.
Yeah, I don't know. I've known some parents like that. That doesn't seem out of the realm of possibility.
I guess. So this is where Eos has 3 hours to gather her five things to take with her to Avid, her exile city. And this is kind of stretched out through the book, like the explanations of what happens, but I'm just going to kind of put it all in here.
Right.
There are four exile cities where this specific civilization sends all of its criminals.
Yep.
That's the premise. You do X bad thing, you get sent to X bad town. Avid is for thieves. She's a thief. She is sentenced to Avid. It's a junkyard town. That's where all of the junk is put. Bellicose Caverns is for people who are violent and murderous. The people who hit people or murder them or whatever. Delace is for drug users or vandals because of the statistical link between the two. So if you do graffiti or if you smoke weed, you go off to this town. Equivox is for extreme liars, pathological liars. And Clamorite is for noise polluters who cause public disturbance and noise complaints.
Yes. The worst problems in the world. Murderers, thieves, noise polluters. I don't know. I do feel like every truck with a loud exhaust that goes by, I really feel like they should be put in jail.
Jake Brakes, the inventor of the Jake Brake. Oh my God.
That's so silly.
The premise itself is so stupid. I'm sorry. And here's the thing that they build over and over and over, that they say over and over and over. We don't have enough people to man prisons. Therefore, we just exile the people who are bad so we don't have to deal with them ever again. We lock them in this little town and we throw away the key. And there's one person in that town who has to deal with everybody. If they eat each other alive, we don't care.
Yeah, I mean, that's got some historical bearing, maybe?
Except...
like Australia being a prison colony, that's...
Yes, but if you're thinking, oh, there's so many people, we can't manage the prison system. We cannot run these prisons. How many people do you think are in Avid, for example, where she's going? There's too many people to manage this prison.
Which one was Avid?
The thieves one.
Right.
You'd think thievery would be pretty common in a post-apocalyptic world.
So like a small town of people.
Right. So how many people would you guess?
100,000? Million?
30 people.
30 people. All together.
All together. Live in Avid. Everyone is gathered for a single meal in a single cafeteria room, and she knows the names of, like, everybody in 2 days. How the fuck is that too many people to have in a prison?
Why are there so few thieves? What?
Why would you bother putting this population in a town?
That doesn't even read as jail. Like, you're just in a wide space.
You're just putting in a town.
30 other people. Yeah, that's...
Yes.
That's so weird.
So, that's the world. That's the world we're in. So, they don't know if other cities exist, if other world people live out there in the world.
Right.
I think there's 5 cities total, and then there's the exile towns. And there's like 5 exile towns. I think the biggest city is maybe the size of Roanoke. Like, it has billboards and a big wall and guards. But in Delace, they meet 2 people total in the entire town for druggies. They see no one else. It makes you think that the population after the war, whatever that was, must be in like the 10,000, 15,000 total. But they all live in these 10 cities.
Yeah.
And these cities have to be within walking distance of each other because they walk from city to city in 2 days.
Yeah. 30 people just seems so manageable.
Yeah.
I don't understand, like, putting them in specific areas. Like, if you're going to, like, if the punishment is the lack of society or that structural system, just exile them. Just kick them out. They're not allowed to
be... Yeah, lock the doors and don't let them in.
Yeah.
And apparently this exile system has been in place for 100 years, but I don't know when the war was supposed to have been.
Yeah.
That's implied to have been before the exile system, because the exile system is from lack of population control.
See, this is why I really don't like dystopias in the first place. It makes the entire world so... just shrinks it so far down.
Without negotiating the realistic limitations on that world.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like there's that Netflix show, Sweet Tooth.
Mm-hmm.
I love that show, but random places have electricity and random places don't.
Yeah.
Everyone has clean water, but it's never explained how. Mm. And like 90% of the population dies, but then other people are like just fine.
Yeah. Just whatever's convenient for the plot.
Yes. Yeah. Everything in this book is convenient for the plot.
Mm-hmm.
She ends up in Avid. They have these vans that come and move them out of their city into their exile town.
Mm-hmm.
She goes home. She gathers her five things. So of her five things, one is a copper ring from her childhood friend named Fabian. He'd moved away. She takes cash. She takes a leather satchel, a picture of her with her dad and granddad, and a blanket. She has a long leather jacket, like you've seen in the picture.
Duster.
Photo. She's wearing a duster.
Nice.
It has secret inside compartment pockets.
Better
and
for
nobody
stealings.
Ever searches her. So she in that, she hides like extra stuff and her pocket knife from her granddad. She goes to the city gate. She gets into the van. Her parents refuse to see her and she just leaves.
Her parents are still just being dramatic.
Yeah. They won't open the door. So she has to sneak into her room through her window. And she is literally being exiled for her whole life.
Maybe that's why she got into stealing stuff is because her parents were like theater geeks.
how dare. So she's just written off and they just send her away. She's on her way to Avid.
Yep, the plot's going this way.
The plot has to move her to this new place.
Yeah.
She gets there, they drop her off, and it is a landfill with a fence around it. And there's school-like buildings in the middle where people live.
Mm-hmm.
There's a cafeteria, three or four larger buildings that have apartment hostel-style rooms in them. And common bathroom, common living room. She is there with three other young adults.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the only young adults there.
Like they all showed up at the same time?
No, the other ones have been living there for a while.
Oh, okay.
They have this one whole building is just for them because they're the young adult. She gets her own room. The middle-aged adults have their own building and there's like a few dozen of them. And then there's the old people home with the 80-year-old people and they've been there the longest and they just sit and rot in their rooms.
Who's deciding these things?
There is a common person who is like in charge of the town. And if you were the person chosen to be in charge of the town, you get extra rations, clothing, food, whatever. And that's the person who decides how the town is run.
I don't know, man. It seems like, I mean, I understand they live in an actual dump, but free housing?
Free food. Her only job is to take a bucket of water and pour it over a row of carrots every day. That is her one and only job.
What?
She gets
how big is this row, though? This is like a huge
20
row.
Feet long, maybe? It's a standard garden plot.
How wide?
A single row wide.
God.
A row of carrots.
I'm so bad at devil's advocate.
Come on, man. Help me out here. Literally, it is someone else's job to fill the bucket of water and carry it to the garden.
Oh, my God. Is there just so little to do? They have to split up the one task that they have between three people.
But you'd think with so few able-bodied adults, they would have a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
But the bigger cities send them rations every week. And they literally get rations of food, and this is just to supplement their diet. Everyone, all day long, they go and pick in trash piles and take the trash into their room and decorate their room.
I was like, that sounds fucking fun, man.
It's a hoarder's paradise.
Sounds awesome.
I've realized my biggest issue with this book.
Mm.
I don't know if it's a young adult novel or not.
Mm-hmm.
Because off the bat, we're dealing with prison. We're dealing with exile. She stole rum. She wants to have alcohol. She's sent away. These are kind of more adult topics that you would more expect to be in an adult novel. And she's 20. Most of the time, if you're doing a young adult novel, you're still going to have those aspects in a dystopian novel. But your character is going to be 16,
well,
a little younger.
I feel like she probably had to be a little bit more careful. Like maybe she had to like age code a little bit, maybe. Like she wanted her character to like really want to drink, but maybe she didn't want to make it seem like she was advocating for 16-year-olds being able to drink. So someone that was of age, but not technically legal, maybe?
Maybe. The thing is that Eos and the other three young adults in Avid act like fucking children.
Right, that's what
they
I'm saying.
They act like babies.
Like, she intended the story to be about, like, 16-year-olds or something like that.
Yeah, and if they were written as 16, that would be much more reasonable than 20 and 25.
Mm-hmm. And maybe she just didn't feel comfortable with her main character being 16 and stealing liquor. I don't know.
I'm
doing my best.
You're doing a good job.
Hey.
Good job. She gets her own room. She meets the other young people.
Mm-hmm.
There's two boys and a girl. The girl's 18 and she's been there for 2 years because she was a compulsive thief as a teenager. And the other two are Zane and Luca, and they're in their mid-20s, 24, 25.
Yeah.
The entire time she's in Avid, these three kids, young adults, just bully her. They just bully the shit out of her. Like, like she goes to the bathroom to take a shower. She tries to go out. They stole her clothes and towel. So she has to run through the house naked to her bedroom. They go on a game of hide and seek. And then when they get caught, they run away and leave her to face up to whatever. One of them lies and tells her to take all the rolls. So she takes the dinner rolls at dinner. She didn't read the sign. And everyone starts calling her pig and yelling at her for taking more than her share. They are just consistently mean. And that's fine if these are kids, but these are supposed, age-wise, they're supposed to be adults.
Yeah.
They're written as children. She doesn't really make connections with anybody there. She doesn't make friends, really. It's just a series of, okay, I'm watering carrots, I'm getting bullied, and I found these papers. They're digging through all this trash. Some of this trash is old, and some of this trash is new.
Yeah.
So the main cities dump their trash in Avid every week or two. They come in with their dump trucks and dump their trash. They pick a random pile, and they just go digging for fun. Do you want this pillow? Do you find some clothes? Do you find this thing, that thing? And they find a box that's like shiny mirrored box, and inside is a key. And in a different box, they find a bunch of papers. The papers are about a thing called the skeleton key. And over a long period of time, you finally find out all the junk about all that stuff. So I'm just going to tell it to you in a very straightforward, concise way.
Can I go on a quick tangent real fast?
Yeah.
You know what would have been a really fun direction for this to have gone? If this was like a radical recycling education thing, like, yeah, they have to like figure out how to take like all the trash of the five other cities and use it like as a resource instead of like part of their punishment.
Right.
It
could be really interesting to just have a story about someone who lives there and uses it to build interesting things or make stuff. They kind of try to do that with the skeleton key because the person who made the skeleton key used it out of pieces found in the dump. This was some guy, I don't know, 50 years ago or something. And he made a device called the skeleton key that when you twist the handle, the little spokes poke out of the holes on it and you can open any lock.
So wait, 50 years, so that someone was living in the dump 50 years ago. So they've had this punishment system in place.
For 100 years.
Okay. For some reason, because she talked about the war and like, how do you go through your daily life? Like the World War II was 100 years ago.
World War I was 100 years ago.
Well, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Yes.
How many times in a day or a year or any amount of time in your life do you think, because of the war that happened so many years ago, I have to deal with this thing?
None, but also the war and the exile system are not linked except by population was decreased from the war. But I don't know at what point before the exile system the war actually happened. Because it's never said in this book.
Yeah.
And also, like, who has realm from more than 100 years ago?
Yeah, that's pretty niche, too.
In a normal little bar on a street in a corner of a town. To me, that's just itself is really odd of the things that would be saved and last in this town, in this world.
Yeah, that is pretty bizarre.
So they found the box with papers and she's bored. So she reads the papers. The skeleton key is the master key. It can open any lock. Don't ask me how. You twist the little levers. It does it. It's magic. It's the magic key. It's the plot driver that causes the whole book to happen.
Is it literal magic or just figurative magic?
Figurative magic.
Okay, like it actually just doesn't matter how it actually works.
It doesn't matter.
It's effectively magic.
It's effectively their get out of any corner
key.
Okay. It's the key that will get them into and out of anything.
Oh, yeah.
That's what she wants. She has decided she wants this skeleton key so that she can go in and out of any city that she wants and do anything she wants. In order to get the skeleton key, there's 5 keys to open the box that holds the skeleton key. Each of those 5 keys are in the exile towns in little tiny boxes. And so she has to go into each exile town to find its key and then find the master's box that holds the skeleton key. Use those keys to unlock that one and then get the skeleton key.
This sounds like a weird-ass fetch quest.
It is. The whole book is a fetch quest.
Oh, my God. No. All right. So this is something they do in games, and I get why they do it in games. Like, they want to, like, showcase, you know, the different areas that have been created in the game, and I guess this is effectively what's being done in this book, but doing a literal fetch...
She just built this world and wants you to show you the world.
Mm-hmm.
The characters don't matter. The keys don't even matter.
Yeah.
She just wants to take you to each town.
She's exploring a concept and wants to show the concept, and it doesn't really matter about the delivery system,
right?
I guess.
And my thing is, this could be really interesting if she philosophically went through, what would a town full of liars look like?
Mm-hmm.
How could a town filled with pathological, convincing liars survive? Because you can't trust anyone.
Mm-hmm.
You can't believe anyone. How would you have any relationships, any social construct?
Mm-hmm. Like any trust.
Right. She does it fairly well in Avid. Of everyone steals Eos's stuff immediately.
Mm-hmm.
All of her shit gets stolen over and over and over.
Right.
She goes and steals other people's shit.
Yeah.
That's what you expect in a town full of thieves.
That is kind of fun, though.
It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
In fact, she tries to, like, tell the main guy, like, it was my fault.
All these thieves are stealing my stuff.
All these thieves are stealing my stuff. And he says, keep in mind, we are an exile town for thieves. Do you really think anyone is going to kick a person out for stealing? If you want something, take it. Mm. He's like, yeah, this, your petty ring getting stolen isn't my issue, kid. Mm.
Oh, wait, here's a weird wrinkle. What if you commit other crimes in this exile town? Do you get sent to the other towns just by doing crimes within that town?
You can be.
Really? That's so weird.
You can be.
I meant that as a joke.
It's supposed to be a till you die exile.
Yeah.
But like Bellicose, if you are very violent, they will send you there because it's for violent people.
Okay.
So you can get kicked out.
So that's more like solitary. Like you're going to solitary confinement within prison.
Within a prison full of violent people because they're not separated in any way.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know who won't send you to prison? You can do your own lead it if you want.
My local thief official, you know who else has a skeleton key to every convenient location you come across?
Who?
BetterHelp.
My socials are the key to happiness.
Yeah. ads. Hey, Biblio fans, friends, and fiends. Just taking a moment to tell you how to find our growing community. We're on Facebook and Instagram, where we try to post as often as we can. We have a subreddit that will start as soon as we get over our crippling fear of it. And, of course, our YouTube. Look us up at Bibliorex, spelled BIBLIOWRECKS. We'd love to hear suggestions and chat about bad books there, as well as over email. Our email is bibliorex@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Now let's get back to that bad book. And we're back to steal all your stuff.
Please steal this book. Take it away. Yeah, so she's in Avid reading these pages. She talks to this old man who lives there. He's 86 and he's lived there for like 40 some years. Mm-hmm. And they literally just live there and rot until they die. Hmm. And people were talking about like boredom, but so I guess that's why the kids get into trouble.
Yeah, they're
kids, just causing 25-year-old trouble. 25-year-old kids. Yeah. Zane is like 24-ish, and he's really bored. He teases her a lot. He steals her stuff. And finally, he's like standing in the hallway and he's like, no, I'm not getting out of the way, getting in her face. So she punches him in the nose and breaks his nose.
Nice. Well, maybe I did just think of this. These younger people have like regressed a little bit. Like they don't have like the actual responsibility required to live in society. So they're actually regressing to like a younger age because they don't have anything else to do.
It's possible, but the characters never grow in any situation.
Just they're two-dimensional bullying machines.
They're just little pieces of cardboard moved through the story.
Nice. Love that for them.
I just want to bring that up as Eos is violent quite a lot in this book, but has to be the good guy, and it's never addressed.
So there's always going to be like a... does it not like justify what she's like, why she's punching people?
Well, she punched him because he was annoying and broke his nose.
Yeah, okay.
And other times it's justified in her head. But in a society where you have such harsh punishments for such mild things.
Yeah, you would almost have that like encoded in you.
Yes. And if it had been 100 years, you would know, oh, my grandfather got hauled away and I never saw him again. Mm. That would cause deep trauma.
Right.
That would destroy households and families. Mm. You would think that the fear of being caught and the fear of being violent or getting exiled would either prevent this crime time or would cause people to be sneakier and better at it.
Right.
I'm not sure. I just find it very odd.
Yeah, it seems very thin on its feet.
You're taking North American middle class white kids, you're sticking them in this world, and they act as a normal middle class white American kid would act.
Right.
In a world that's completely different.
Yeah, that would have been like a cool little wrinkle too. Like if now that she's not necessarily within the bounds of society, unlearning all of the ingrained, I guess at this point, kind of cultural knowledge about how the prison system works in this world, like having to unlearn that to be able to thrive in this prison system, I guess.
I just don't feel the author put much thought into it. It was this premise and we're going to make it work. We're going to shoehorn everything in and make it work.
Honestly, I don't think that YA dystopias are well thought out a lot of the time anyway.
True, which is why I was wondering if this was meant to be young adult. Zane steals the skeleton key papers and the Avid key, and he runs away with them. Eos figures that out, so she packs up all of her stuff, steals food, and leaves Avid to follow him. She goes out to the garden, climbs a tree, and jumps the fence. That's how easy it is to leave Avid, and no one else has ever tried.
Yeah, maybe that's why there's only 30 people.
It was meant to be 3,000.
Yeah, I was thinking about that like earlier because they're continuously dumping trash in the landfill, and I had a thought like, maybe people are like just hitching a ride on the trash trucks. I'm like, no, they're just jumping the fence and leaving.
But they act like Eos is the first person to think of this.
Of course. Okay. In 100 years, you're the first person to leap the fence. That's great. Love that.
In between the cities is sand dunes. Everything is sand and desert. They don't have farmland. Everything is just wasteland.
Maybe that's more the fence than the actual fence. Like if it's just dry desert for 50 miles in every direction, maybe that would be enough to keep people within the landfill.
That's the premise, and that's what the guy in charge of the landfill city says. But when she's out in the dunes, she finds like little burned down cottages and places to sleep. It's just not as taxing as it should be. If it was really that difficult, a 20-year-old lady with a literal just a leather satchel with two bottles of water and a little bag of food, it should be much harder for her to make it from this city to the next city.
That's one thing I always really hate about these kinds of stories too. Like the character has like a nebulous amount of resources. It wants you to think that the resources are low, but it never specifically tells you how much resources, so you don't think about
it
too much.
She doesn't run out. Yeah.
It's kind of like in TV shows where they don't want you to worry about how much money the characters actually make. A lot of the time, anytime there's like a bill or something like that, they'll never actually show you the numbers on the bill.
Like you never see someone pay the cab. They're just in the cab and then out of the cab.
Yeah. And they give, maybe they'll like throw a vague number of mystery bills. They could be ones, they could be 20s. Who knows how much money a cab costs?
So she jumps the fence. She walks. Here's the part that also, through the whole book, I tried to keep track of days. What days did this happen? How many days did this take? And the author was very bad. They didn't do a timeline or did not give us the timeline.
Right.
This is when this happened. This is the time of day this thing is happening. So everything I'm saying, I had to go back and piece together to my best effort. Eos is going over the fence at nighttime. Mm-hmm. And is wandering through the desert at night. And then it's daytime, and these two, and she's wandering around these ruins, mm-hmm. and these two men see her, and they give chase, because it's their job to look for runaways. And if they catch a runaway and haul them in and turn them in, they get money. Hmm. She is able to hide by pulling her hood over her head and crawling into the corner of a building. She's hidden by darkness and soot.
Oh, God. So she just like puts her hood over her head and she's just like, if I can't see them, they can't see me.
Yes. And it works.
Oh, God. This character doesn't have object permanence.
Well, and apparently he was really stupid because he managed to grab her and knock her over. And she knees him in the balls and stabs him in the chest with her pocket knife. Mm. And then he chases again and she's able to just hide with her hood. Mm. And he just can't find her. And so they were talking about that other runaway they caught earlier in the day.
So she doesn't actually have to track down Zane now. Right.
She can just follow them and no one notices her when she's sneaking. But other times she sneaks and she's really bad at it. And she was caught staking out the bar. Yeah. She's a bad thief. She's bad at sneaking.
Yeah. Back to the fight scene from a little bit earlier. Don't you love fight scenes where the person the main character is fighting is basically just a dead rag doll?
Yes. And the person that was chasing her was remarked as notably attractive multiple times. No description and not close enough to really see him, but he was young and very attractive. And then he chased her.
That's weird.
But we're not told like how or how she do that, because she hears voices and they say, there she is, chase her. And she runs off. But he was very attractive.
Like, this guy's chasing me down. He's kind of hot, though.
Yeah.
Don't catch me, haha.
I stab you in the chest. And like that part, okay, they're going to catch her and drag her in. She stabbed him with her knife. Mm-hmm. Fine. They say pocket knife, but she clicks it and the blade comes out. So I think it's a switchblade.
Yeah, that's definitely a switchblade.
Not a pocket knife. Mm-hmm. But, and if it stabs someone in the shoulder, that seems awfully sharp to enter flesh and bone.
Yeah. Which they do make some pocket knives now that you just like push a little part of the actual blade down and it flicks up almost like a switchblade.
Right.
Yeah.
It
just doesn't shoot straight out like the ones in the movies do.
This town that these two men are from is called Norton. She follows them back to Norton and is able to sneak into the gate behind them. Mm-hmm. The gate opens to let them in. They go in and she's able to run and dive roll as the gate's closing.
She put her hood down so they couldn't see her.
They couldn't see her. And she also has very blonde, like platinum blonde hair. And so that's the only thing noticeable about her. So if she can cover her hair, no one notices her. Mm-hmm. That's the rules in the book.
If a white woman isn't blonde, she's not really there.
She's invisible, I guess. Yeah. She loses her boot. She turns around, is able to dig through the bars of the gate and get her boot back. She creeps around and gets to the town hall. She picks a lock. She finds a guard and threatens him with her pocket knife. Mm. She opens Zane's cell and everything goes dark.
Transition again, just like Lost. Love that.
Except she wakes up and it was Zane who punched her out. We don't change. He's like, oh my God, I didn't know it was you. I thought it was the guard. I was going to punch him out. No reason to punch her out.
Honestly, there.
I don't know.
Honestly, I'm thinking about the shoe. Because that
they were
could
laced
have been
up
like,
boots too.
Yeah.
I don't know how you would just lose those with a gate.
That could have been like a cool little thing for the character to have to like go through and be like, one foot is totally barefoot and she's got to like fight to walk right and step
noticed.
On some glass or something. That could have been cool if it hadn't been just immediately resolved.
It's resolved. They climb the gate and get out of Norton.
Mm.
It was just a, here, I'm here to rescue you.
Mm.
They never get caught. They never get noticed. They go out and find ruins and find a cabin. They lay down to sleep and it's cold. So they have to cuddle next to each other.
Yep. Not a YA without a teen love interest for 20-year-olds.
20 and 25.
Yeah,
but they're acting like young adult, teenage romance stuff.
That's weird.
And he puts his arm around her and says, "For warmth," he said with an airy chuckle. This is the guy she punched his nose yesterday.
Yeah, they shouldn't like each other. This he just hit her in the face.
Stole all her stuff.
Yeah.
He repeatedly stole her stuff. He smeared chocolate pudding on her mattress. He stole her clothing. This guy has bullied her nonstop the whole book. And now they're best buds and sleeping in each other's arms.
Mm. Yeah. That doesn't quite track, does it?
No. And I mean, the punch in the face was accidental, but also you'd think you would kind of have hard feelings of, I'm here to rescue you, knocked out.
Yeah.
Because that would be a hard punch to actually get knocked out.
Which I don't, just the transition from I'm chasing him
to get my key back.
Yeah, to get my stuff back.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're in this together.
Mm-hmm.
But why?
Very weird. They wake up in the ruins and Zane finds two fancy daggers and gives one to Eos.
Okay.
These are like, you know, when you go to the flea market and there's always those people selling cheap Chinese replicas of katanas or whatever.
Yeah.
It's literally that.
Okay.
Like one has like a dragon with jewels in its eyes and one
that's
has
so trashy. Like I love it.
Yes. Very trashy.
I loved those when I was a kid.
I did. I bought one for one of my friends. I loved those things.
I used to get like one of those magazines where they had like they had like ninja stars and they had like the three clawed hand thingy.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was like advertised like a tiger claw thing. And I got that and cut up all my brother's blankets and shit.
Yes. I just was laughing because that was just that it's just such a teenager thing of ooh, and we each have one and we're matching. Hello, Biblio freaks, geeks, and lovers. Bugs here. We wanted to let you know about our option to follow us on Patreon. We have a couple of tiers where you can listen to our bad book, bad movie review. We read a bad book and then we watch its bad movie counterpart. In the past, we've done Aragorn, Shadowbuilder by Bram Stoker, and we have a lot of different things in the future. Please let us know if you have any suggestions for future bad book, bad movie combos, and let's get back to the podcast. They walk to Delace in a couple hours. So I was looking, I've been doing the mental math of these people. They're walking through sand.
Mm-hmm.
They're not walking more than 2.5 miles an hour.
Right.
If you can walk in a place in a day, 12-ish hours, that is 30 miles. Not far at all between towns.
Yeah.
Not at all. Not at all far. They are able to walk from Eivind to Norton in less than a day and a half because it was part of that night and then part of the next day. And then they're able to walk to Delace in a couple hours. So it's literally a mile or two away.
This very much sounds like someone who has not done a lot of traveling.
Or walking.
Yeah.
In this author's mind, 2 days of travel, whether by car or by foot, is the same. I did the math. I have some math angst. But this is like a county. This is an entire civilization the size of a county.
Right.
This is like going from Roanoke to Salem or from Salem to Christiansburg.
Right.
Okay, it's all sand dunes. We don't have fancy roads. We don't have public transportation.
Mm-hmm.
But this isn't long distances.
Right.
This is not far away.
Mm.
Everything here is within a county, but this is the whole of civilization.
Mm-hmm.
I find that bizarre, and I find it bizarre that you would get rid of any breeding population and send them off to exile towns and not have a really strong breeding program of, we want you to have as many babies as possible. You're 20 years old. Find a husband. We will pay you for each baby you pop out.
Right.
Like, if you have 30 thieves from this entire society, just don't let them thieve. Just keep them in a house and make them take care of their kids. Put them under house arrest or something.
It would be a cool concept if it was being done a little bit more like prison colonies. And they're wanting to
self-sustaining.
Right. And they want to start colonizing an area, so they don't want any of their the gentry or anything like that going outside of the safe limits. So they send all the dregs and all that to start doing the actual colonizing.
Right. That would make sense if they weren't also locked inside of towns and they're not improving anything.
And being sent resources every day.
And being sent very valuable resources of food and all these medicine, whatever. It's just very odd.
Right.
They walk to Delice. It's D-E-L-I-S-S-E. Delice?
Yeah, Delice. Yeah.
Delice? Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Delice is for druggies and people who do graffiti.
Is that the... Wait. Hold on.
Because they're the same.
I'm having a druggies and people who do graffiti. Totally unrelated question. What kind of the local culture a little different in Delice?
Is it brown people?
Is it brown people?
Nope.
Okay.
We never meet a brown person.
All right.
Nobody's skin is really expressed, except a couple people are remarked as pale. But there is no indication of anybody's... The only one is there's one person who says darling a lot. There's one person who has tribal tattoos and a septum piercing. But even he isn't given a different skin tone. Right. That's the only description of him. The only two people they meet in Delice are druggy stoner types.
Okay. Well, I mean,
at least... And the town is full of graffiti.
Right. I mean, at least... That could have been definitely done worse. I would rather it be
left vague.
It's not... I mean, it's not awesome that there's not, like, a great deal of representation, but... Not everyone is prepared to be able to handle that.
Yeah, they don't make a point of, oh, the bad people are brown. They don't make any issues really around race or even class at all.
So,
I was looking for it and I didn't find anything like that.
Okay.
So the two people they meet, they have a house in like this factory sort of building and they have beaded curtains on the doors and like, it's very like 70s drug culture sounding. They offer orange juice to Eos and Zane, who don't really want to drink it, and he pops pills. And then she's like, can we just go? And the guy comes up behind her and stabs her with a tranquilizer.
What the fuck? What? All right. I feel like this author went to a college party like once and was very uncomfortable. And just felt really insecure and unsafe and just didn't want to be there. And that's what she thinks that drug culture is.
Yeah. And you'd think that a girl, a woman, who went to fucking prison over rum.
Right.
Would be interested in trying some of these things that are on offer. Why wouldn't you try the pills? There's nothing else to do.
I mean, the alcohol is the socially acceptable drug of choice.
So they're lying and saying that they are inner city messengers and they are going to Delice to get something to take it somewhere else. Like they're lying about being from a different exile town.
Right.
But this guy is not in charge of anything. They don't have to listen to him. Yeah. The only reason they went with him was his buddy had a knife and was like pointing it at them. And they both have daggers. And they're both violent. Eos has stabbed people. Eos punched Zane in the nose. His face probably looks like a disaster. I wouldn't threaten them with a pocket knife.
Right.
So they are powerless when it's handy.
Right.
And extremely violent and powerful when they need to be.
Mm-hmm.
She gets tranked. She wakes up. She is chained to a pipe and he's, quote unquote, interrogating her. Why are you here? What do you want? I'm looking for a box. You're lying. I don't know. Let me go. I'll let you go when I want to. Maybe I'll turn you in. Blah, blah, blah.
To who?
I guess to someone in one of the cities that there was a runaway that didn't belong there.
What specific jail are you going to go for this crime?
There's some nebulous other ultimate jail out
there. Super jail.
There's a super jail that if you're super bad and you don't follow the exile system, you'll go to real prison.
God damn it.
You can't make a joke.
You're going to Yeah, every time I try to make a joke, that's just something that's in the story.
Yes.
Oh, God.
He goes on this philosophical rant of, people used to tell me everything changes, but nothing ever does. You get stuck in life. You get jobs. Nothing is happening. You just, everything stays the same till you rot.
It's all bullshit, man.
It's all bullshit, man. That's his thing.
Yeah. Really, really carding up the druggy stereotype.
Yes, but at least he doesn't have dreads.
Mm. Yeah.
She decides to make fun of him. And she's like, funny, coming from someone who pops pills all the time. Shut up. You don't know the half of it. Sure I do. Daddy was mean to you, wasn't he? I jeered, a smirk growing on my face. Don't talk about my father. Did Daddy hurt your feelings? This guy slaps her in the face. She's chained up.
Yeah.
I have to read this to you because it is so funny. I growled and without a second thought, rammed my boot straight into his chest, forcing the breath out of him and knocking him from his already wobbly squat. Instantly, I smashed my feet downwards with all of my strength, aiming for his face. My boots made impact with his jawbone and nose as he rolled over to his hands and knees, reeling in pain. His face drooping to the ground, he clutched his nose as blood began to drip onto the concrete. Before he could lift his head, I pressed my boot against the back of his neck, digging his face into the ground. I pressed harder with my boot. Me? Harder? Go! I howled, pressing harder still. Okay, just get off. See, wasn't that easy? Where's my bag? So he hands over...
God, you're being annoying.
He hands over the key to the handcuffs. She takes her stuff and leaves.
Why?
He tells her that Zane already left. That he told them all what happened and Zane just walked away.
Fuck Zane.
That's what she says. Fuck Zane. She doesn't. There's no cussing. Mm.
He just left a douchebag.
My hands and legs were shaking as I bolted out of the door. I've never hurt anyone like that before. I felt a twinge of guilt before rationalizing that I only fought in self-defense. He deserved it, I told myself. She's punched Zane in the nose. She stabbed someone with a knife. She keeps doing these violent things, but it's all in self-defense. And I've never done anything like this before because she completely forgot. And I don't have a problem with being violent in self-defense.
Right.
I don't have a problem with her. I have a problem with the idea that this is a 14-year-old sheltered child who's never been out in the world, but she's written as a 20-year-old in a society where you should understand the ramifications of your actions. This world has such strict morality around things like lying and violence, and the results are so drastic. You would think that your awareness of every little action would make you paranoid and careful. She decides that, yep, Zane has left without her, and she decides that she is going to walk to Equivox.
I mean, it's only like a 30-minute walk, so why not?
She walks for two full days. So I did the math, and that's 60 miles. Yeah. All these other towns are like literally like hours walk, yeah. like very, very close. This one is a little further. This is also the most infuriatingly weird town of all of them.
And what was Equivox?
Equivox is for people who are liars.
Okay.
I don't understand how you lie enough to get exiled. I don't understand how you lie except, I mean, like on government paperwork.
Perjury?
Perjury? I don't understand how you do that enough to trigger this. She walks for the 2 days. She gets there, and this is the first, like, greenery that she's seen. I had to draw a little diagram because this town is so weird. So there's these three circles. The outer circle is trees, okay? It's a wall of trees.
Yeah.
This little inner circle is the cliff, and then inside of that cliff is down where the town is, and then inside, down in there, is a lake. So there's the lake inside of the
This town is an onion.
Down there. Well, it's all underneath each other, like you go down. So what would that be called when you're down inside of just a round hole in the ground?
A cave? I don't.
But it's not a canyon and it's not a cave.
There's that one lake in a cave, and it's kind of, it's like the cave is like wrapped around the lake, but it's still like open to skylight. I think it's in Mexico.
I don't know. But it's open and it just has cliffs around the edge, but it's flat inside, and that's where the town is. So it's flat inside with a lake, and that's where the town is. But the cliffs are sheer rock, and I don't know if you can climb up them or not.
Could just be like a canyon, like they live in the bottom of a canyon.
That's what it sounds like, but they also have a wall of trees around the canyon at the top.
Yeah, it's so they kind of just live like just a pit in the middle of the woods.
Yes, basically.
Man, it's weird. All right.
She decides that the best way to get down to this town is to jump into the lake from the top of this cliff.
That's not advice. Okay. How tall is this cliff? Does it give like an estimate?
If a little girl sees her and is like, "You fell from the sky." It sounds like hundreds of feet.
I'm pretty sure you can die from impact from jumping off of the Golden Gate Bridge.
It's just not described very well because it's not so high that she dies in the story, but it's so high that you have to use an elevator to get from the bottom of the cliff to the top of the cliff with a truck. Because later in the story, they go back and they use an elevator.
Yeah.
And nobody climbs out. I don't know. I don't know.
I hate vague architecture and geography and stories and stuff like that. Like, if it's built a specific way, I would like specific parameters for how this looks.
And there's no reason why.
Otherwise, just leave it vague. Otherwise, just leave it vague. Just let me fill in the blank.
Right. The details are so random to me. She puts her papers and stuff that could be damaged under a tree, and she marks an E on the tree with her dagger. She does take her leather satchel and her other stuff with her, and she cuddles it in her arms, and she jumps into the lake. And as she's in the lake, she sees the shiny box at the bottom of the lake that no one else has noticed.
She just jumped into the plot.
She goes to the edge of the lake, dumps all of her stuff, swims down over and over and over, gets the box, gets the key, and gets caught by a little girl. The little girl's like, "What you got? What you doing here? Who are you? I saw you from the fall from the sky." Just actually, the little girl's written as a very annoying 6-year-old and was written really well.
So children are being born in this prison system.
Apparently not. This child was one of two children born into exile ever.
Okay.
Because she was pregnant when she was exiled. And here's my other problem. Sex is not dealt with in this book at all. The assumption is, people decide not to start families when they're in exile.
Not everyone is that forward thinking.
Nobody has access to medical care to prevent pregnancy. Right. Nobody, it's written Like, we're going to mention these things, but we're not going to deal with them in a mature adult way,
right.
Which makes me feel like the young adult thing of, oh, we just don't talk about sex.
Yeah.
We don't think about sex. It doesn't exist.
Yeah,
we are four 14-year-old kids.
Mm-hmm.
14-year-olds probably not thinking about the ramifications of birth control and condoms.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. But this little girl is born into it.
Right.
And because they only send rations for people who are in exile,
mm-hmm.
she's not in exile, so she doesn't get rations. So the mother is splitting her food between her and her daughter.
Hmm. That's...
I don't know.
Yeah, that's weird. This author doesn't seem like they've thought about how prison actually works in the world, for one, to start with.
Children are born in prison every
day. Happens all the time.
Let alone the people having sex or making families within exile. If I'm going to be stuck in this town for the next 60 years.
And I have to be celibate.
Why would I be celibate? Why wouldn't I just get married to someone, or even if it's not a legal marriage, shack up with someone and create a family unit?
Right. If this is your entire life from this point on.
No one's preventing you from having sex, getting married, creating a little life in this little town.
Right.
And of a town of only 30 people. You won't have many choices, but there would still be some.
Right.
And they're shown falling in love and being protective of each other.
Yeah.
This is an automatic thing that these kids are doing.
Mm. This feels very surface level.
Very cardboard, flat characters.
Mm-hmm.
And no depth of thought in the philosophy behind how this would really work.
Well, this has been an episode.
Can you see why I've struggled so hard? Because I can tell this author cares about her story.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell
she's
cares
trying.
About this world.
Yeah.
She just, this needed to go back and get rewritten and thought through more deeply.
Yeah. This feels like a second draft that no one else looked at.
Right.
No one
at
very
the beginning,
critical.
It said, you know, thanks so and so for helping me, you know.
Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like
this and whatever. I just don't feel like this was actually, like, if a real editor at a big publishing company had taken this apart, they would point out some of these problems.
Yeah. Like, this feels like she took this book and had her friends and family read it. Mm-hmm. And
they were very nice.
They were either very nice or just not critical enough to give her honest critique, probably.
Yeah.
And like, coming up with this stuff isn't easy. And like, trying to think of all this stuff and trying to get a story in a structured order and at the same time make it all seem real and realistic and sensible.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. I mean, it was a very quick, easy read.
Mm-hmm.
We're halfway through.
Yeah.
Some of the concepts could have been done in a really in a much better way. But, you know, for your standard of vibes, not bad.
Yeah.
The vibes weren't bad. It was it was amusing. I wouldn't mind if my daughter read it or, you know, I wouldn't say, oh, this book is bad. Pull it off the shelves.
Right.
You know, it's not bad.
Yeah.
It's just very shallow.
Mm-hmm. Well, it wasn't a crime, but
it wasn't such a bad wreck. It was just kind of sad.
Yeah. But maybe we should save the rest of it for next episode.
Yeah, we'll come back and we will do the other half of Eos by Jen Guberman.
Hmm.
Thank you, Jay, for helping us stay on a time track. I don't know. I cannot do short episodes. Oh my God, I'm sorry, Bam Bam. I looked at my notes and I was like, I can get this done in an hour. We can be halfway done in an hour and a half.
Yeah. It's so hard to pace it too. And I mean, because number one, we go on tangents while we're talking and you don't know how long that's going to take.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's just a lot to try to figure.
And we're still getting the hang of all this and everything. So
yeah,
I guess we'll catch you next week for the second half. Thank you for being here, and check us out on our socials and send us emails and suggestions at bibliorex @gmail.com and on all the socials.
And comments on YouTube. I don't know if there... Is there a way for people to get a hold of us on Spotify? Is that a thing?
I don't think so. Patreon, if they became a patron, they can message on Patreon.
Right. That would probably be the best way. Hint, hint. Money.
All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.